Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Google Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Boomer Vision Edition. Yes, today is a Boomer Vision Edition. I'm going to chauffeur Orbian anyway, just because it's Boomer Vision doesn't mean you don't have to go to republicbroadcasting.org and you don't have to click on the donate button and send some denomination, some currency, a quantity of some currency. You do have to do it because it's important, because RBN deserves your support. And of course, I'm also going to chauffeur Co-Certified because it's the app that helps you lead a non-kosher certified lifestyle. That's something we all want to do. But it is Boomer Vision. It's Boomer Vision today. Is it even Boomer Vision? Usually Boomer Vision means Patrick Slattery yelling at the TV or something like that. This is actually not the TV so much. It was a YouTube video. The video, you don't need to see the video. It is a conversation between one of my two academic heroes, the other being Kevin McDonald. This is Stephen F. Cohen. He's a Russia scholar. And he's talking to Larry King. Now, neither of these two gentlemen are boomers. Larry King, actually, I have to admit, when I heard this, I was like, I hate to say it, but he's still alive. But more than that, he's still working. I didn't know he was still working, because Larry King has been old for a very, very long time. Actually, I'm kind of surprised to find out he's only 86. He sounds a lot older, but he's 86. He was on CNN for decades. I don't know who he's with now, but then he's talking to Stephen F. Cohen. Stephen F. Cohen, the Russia scholar from Princeton University and New York University. He is a professor emeritus at both institutions. He's 81. Now, the oldest boomers right now would be about 73. So these guys are older than boomers, but I'm the boomer, so it's Boomer Vision. And I'm not going to be yelling. I'm actually just going to be playing the bulk of their discussion, which will take up about half the show. And the other half of the show, it's going to be me interspersed between these segments, analyzing it. I think it's interesting. Just a little anecdote about Stephen F. Cohen. I've never met him, but 30 years ago or so, when I was a grad student, I did call him once and asked him for some advice, as somebody who, at the time, I was fascinated with Mikhail Gorbachev, and I wanted to study with Professor Cohen, but he was at Princeton, and you know, one thing led to another. He was on sabbatical, and anyway, but I did have a conversation with him once, and then many years later, when I was substituting for Farron on RBN, I thought, you know, I'd like to talk to some people. I'm going to use this as an excuse to call up people and get interviews with them. And you know, I called up, like, I think my first interview was with James Petras, who was a professor at New York University Binghamton, and I had a good interview with him. He's very old, and I did get Professor McDonald. I tried to get Professor Cohen, and I looked in my old phone book from 30 years ago, and lo and behold, there was his number, and I called it up, and he answered. It was pretty cool. He didn't remember me, obviously. But I told him about the show. I said, it's called The Alternative Media. He says, oh, that's a good name. Good name for a show. And I asked him if he thought he could do it. And he said, well, he's in the middle of writing a book, and he didn't know if he would have the time, but he'd think about it. And I thought, I don't want to get him in trouble. I said, okay, well, thank you. I do want to let you know that I am an associate with David Duke. And he said, what you do in your spare time is your business. I haven't said that because even just saying that, if people hear that he didn't immediately freak out and run around in circles with his hair on fire when he heard the name David Duke, I mean, I don't know if he'll ever be allowed on Tucker anymore. He just said, what you do in your spare time is your business. And then we had a very nice conversation. I reminded him, or tried to remind him, of our previous conversation, and we talked about mutual acquaintances, and reminisced about one, late mutual friend of ours, and had actually a very, very pleasant conversation. So anyway, that's the lead up to this. But yesterday, on yesterday's show, Mr. T literally shined the bat light, and William from Montana, who is my go-to guy on Russia matters, because I don't call up Stephen F. Cohen, I haven't talked to him since, but we had a discussion about this. I wouldn't call it a shakeup, because a shakeup is usually when the guy at the top is shaking up his cabinet, but Putin's cabinet resigned, where I guess technically it was Dmitry Medvedev's cabinet, the prime minister, and we talked about that. And if you want information about that, go to yesterday's show, and I think William is an excellent analyst of Russian affairs. This was recorded, was about Christmas Eve or something, so they're actually not talking about the shit that, this week's events in Russia. They're talking about the impeachment and the effective prohibition on Donald Trump having a relationship with Vladimir Putin. And I think it's very interesting. So without further ado, let's get this ball rolling.
He has been described as brilliant and blistering, a Putin apologist, the most controversial Russia expert in America. He's Stephen F. Cohen, author of the new book, War with Russia. He joins us for a provocative one-on-one on this edition of Politicking. I'm Larry King. Scholar Stephen Cohen advised President George H.W. Bush on the former Soviet Union. He has taught Russian studies at Princeton and NYU, published columns in the Washington Post, Reuters, and elsewhere. He recently said that relations between the United States and Russia are worse now than any time since the 1950s. What's behind that claim, and who, if anyone, does he think can improve the relationship between the two countries? Let's find out as Professor Cohen joins me from New York. His latest book is War with Russia. I'm showing it to you. From Putin and Ukraine to Trump and Russiagate. Okay, Stephen, thanks so much for joining us. I thought everything between Russia and the United States was going to be better because of the relationship between Putin and Trump and the fact that Russia wanted Trump in the office.
Isn't it interesting that Larry King just immediately assumes that Russia wanted Trump in the White House?
Well, I think, Larry, you and I are what's called veterans of the previous Cold War, which lasted 40 years. It's kind of nice to talk with someone approximately of my generation.
I'm older than you.
Because, well, I don't know about that.
Go ahead.
You look better. So we're of the same generation. The point is that the younger generation didn't live through the preceding Cold War. It's history to them. So they don't understand or feel the need to explain how we ended up in a new Cold War, particularly since we were told, you and I, and we told our kids, who are now in their 20s, when the Soviet Union and communism ended in 1991, we were now going to have friendship and partnership. In fact, Bill Clinton's presidency, his policy with Boris Yeltsin, then president of post-Soviet Russia, was premised on this notion that we now have, and I quote, a strategic partnership and friendship with Russia. And yet today, what is it? I can't do the math, but going on 30 years later, we are told in Washington that Russia is now an existential enemy of the United States and a grave danger to our national security. So that's what my book tries to deal with, because it was written during these last 5 years when things got worse, and yet it's not easy to explain.
George W. Bush said, I look in Putin's eyes and I trust him. Putin obviously interfered in our elections. He wanted Trump in office, and you're going so far as to call a book War with Russia. What went wrong? What went wrong?
So Larry King continues to push this whole Russia hoax.
So you and I, Larry, have a history here, which you may not fully remember. When Trump became the candidate in 2016, before the election, you invited me on to comment on what I thought Trump might mean for relations with Russia. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
And I said something that upset many of my liberal progressive friends, that I was not going to vote for Trump. I didn't approve of a lot of things he said and did, maybe most things. But when he campaigned, and I quote him, on the need to cooperate with Russia, I thought that was very, very important, because by 2016, relations with Russia had become dangerous. Mrs. Clinton, on the other hand, during the campaign, promised a very hard line toward Russia, even going so far as to bomb Syria, where Russian troops were operating. That would have been an act of war against Russia. So I said to you on the air, we can say what we want about Trump, but I have a priority because I see the dangers. I want a president who wants to cooperate with Russia. Now, you and I remember that in the 20th century, this was called détente, and we had episodes of détente. So think back with me, Larry. The three presidents of the 20th century who pursued with Soviet Russia major episodes of détente were all Republicans, as is Trump. First, Eisenhower in the 50s with Khrushchev, then Nixon with Brezhnev, and then most successfully, we thought, Ronald Reagan with Gorbachev. So détente with Russia was a kind of Republican tradition. And I wasn't terribly surprised when Trump advocated it. But then suddenly we're told, no, 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 this is not legitimate. This is somehow about Trump's shadowy relationship with the Kremlin. And there we are. Trump has tried. I don't like much else that he does. He has tried to pursue a policy of détente with Putin.
Why?
And he hasn't been able to.
Why, Stephen, should we be friendly with a country that obviously interfered with our elections, that goes into Ukraine, that is still a danger to NATO? I understand friendship, it's a good idea to talk than to fight. But why should we be? Why wasn't Hillary right?
So Larry King keeps coming back to these themes, the interfering the elections and the invasion of Ukraine and all of this. And Professor Cohen does a good job. He's not he doesn't make it too confrontational, and maybe not quite as forceful as I would like him to be. But let's hear what he has to say.
So, you and I are now going to argue, and which is good because we need to have these issues explored in a way that they're not being explored in the American mainstream media today. So, there are two issues that you raise. I have never advocated friendship with Russia. I advocate friendship with Larry King, with my friends. I advocate partnership with Russia that is essential and has been the case for decades because of our capacity to destroy each other with nuclear weapons and the rest of the world with it. That we have an existential need to partner with Russia on national security matters. And every American president in our lifetime, Larry, or just start with Eisenhower.
Why start with Eisenhower? You're talking to Larry King. Why not go back to Herbert Hoover?
Has understood this. The country has asked the president, partner with Russia so that there's not a war. Now we're in a new situation. Trump is not empowered to partner with Putin. But I disagree with you. It is much more complicated what Russia under Putin did or didn't do. Personally, and these are separate issues for debate, what happened in Ukraine was not provoked by Russia, but by the West. The record is fairly clear. Secondly, I don't know what it means to say that Russia meddled or interfered in our presidential election.
It's obvious.
And the reason, no, but what? Let's ask what's obvious. Was it obvious to you? You remember this, I think, that in 1996, the Clinton administration literally encamped in Moscow to get its partner, Boris Yeltsin, who had almost no chance of being reelected, to get him reelected. And we were so proud of that interference in Russia's presidential election that Showtime made a movie about it, feature film, called Saving or Spinning Boris. And Time magazine put it, when Yeltsin won, on the cover with a picture of Yankee Doodle Dandy or something, Yeltsin carrying an American flag, and the cover read, Yanks to the Rescue. What do I want to say? That ever since the Russian Revolution of 1917, when we intervened in the Russian Civil War, my uncle was sent there by Wilson. So he told me the story.
Okay, we've got a few minutes before the break, and this might be a good time to just jump off. And Professor Cohen just mentioned something very interesting, which a lot of people probably aren't aware of. He said his uncle had been sent by President Wilson to fight in the Soviet Union. President Wilson, so in the wake of the 1917 Russian Revolution, which put Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin and others in power, the Allied forces sent troops to assist the White Russians. The Whites were the forces that were fighting against the Reds. Some were, you know, czarists, and then others were Democrats or liberals or whatnot. At any rate, it's got a long history, and interestingly enough, it started out with 50,000 Czech troops, and Czechoslovakia wasn't even a country at the time, but there were like 50,000 Czech prisoners of war in Russia who wanted to go. After Russia left the war, they wanted to go fight against the Germans and the Austrians for Czech independence. And the Russians said, okay, go ahead, but you're going to have to go around the world to get there. And so they were being sent along the Trans-Siberian Railroad, and all of a sudden they decided, well, they wanted their guns, and because the Reds tried to disarm them, and they said, no way, we're keeping our guns. Anyway, that started this Allied intervention in all sorts of countries, France, Germany, even though they were on opposite sides of the war, Finland, Greece, Turkey, United Kingdom, United States, and Japan, big time. They all sent troops. So you had American troops in Russia in the wake of the revolution fighting against the Bolsheviks. The Americans, I think it was, you know, 5,000 troops or so, 400 American deaths in that intervention. The Americans were sent to Archangel, which is near Murmansk. It's on the White Sea, which is a little finger off of the Arctic Ocean, and the and also Vladivostok in the east. Now the Japanese sent 70,000 troops, huge troops. They wound up taking over Eastern Siberia, east of Lake Baikal. Now, there was an interesting episode as the Bolsheviks cemented power in the rest of the Soviet Union, and there was this interesting Jew from, well, he was born in Russia, but he was had been living for a dozen or 15 years or so in Chicago. He's a University of Chicago graduate who wanted to go. Well, he went to by way of Japan to Siberia and set up an independent state. Now, on the other side of the break, I'll finish this story.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now.
The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. September 2018. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I've been using Extendivite for many years now. May 2018. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. March 2018. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. February 2018. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Welcome back to the show. So I'm going into this, what I think is a very interesting history, a little side history. So there was this Jew who from Russia, but he had immigrated to the United States. His name was Alexander Krasnostikov, and he went to Siberia, and he had this plan. He thought that the Japanese and other Allied interventionists really wanted to leave. They needed a face-saving way to get out of Siberia, and so he managed to get through to the Bolshevik headquarters on the other side of Lake Baikal, and he got this plan agreed to by both parties, by both the Bolsheviks and the Japanese, to establish a buffer state, a democratic buffer state called the Far East Republic. So in 1920, the Far East Republic was established, and this facilitated the departure of Allied troops. The Japanese wound up staying, I guess the last Japanese left in 1922, but it had a constitution written in English before it was translated into to Russian. And Krasnostikov, he impressed Americans and Britons. He spoke fluent English, of course. And so you had this buffer state. And then once the Japanese were gone, and Krasnostikov eventually fell out of favor with the hardcore Bolsheviks, And in 1922, the Far East Republic was incorporated into the Soviet Union and basically disappeared from maps. But anyway, I just thought that was interesting, and I suggest you look into the Allied intervention into the Russian Civil War and also the Far East Republic. It's interesting stuff. Okay, back to Professor Cohen.
Russia has meddled in our internal politics, and we have meddled in theirs. What was different in 2016? Social media. The world's changed. To my way of thinking, that's the only difference. It was just more of the same.
Okay.
Neither side should do it, but we've been doing it for 100 years
already. All right, I'll buy it there. Okay, now their guy is in office. They like Trump. I've been with Putin a few times, talked to him on the phone. Seems like a personal guy, probably been a successful American politician. He likes Trump. Helped elect him. Trump likes him. Why is it bad? What happened? You still haven't told me why they're not getting along. Why aren't we better off with Russia if Trump and Putin are get friends?
Okay, so, I mean, you got a lot of hard and complicated questions that are out
there. Just one question.
Let me just step back a little. It is being said today, this was not said a year or two ago, but it's now being said, that Putin and the Kremlin actually got Trump elected. There is no evidence for that.
That's pretty good evidence.
Wait a minute. You know who Nate Silvers is?
Yeah.
This famous pollster? So he tweeted yesterday, and you can look it up, as Casey Stengel used to say, you could look it up. He tweeted yesterday that in his judgment, and he's supposed to be the number one American pollster, that if you listed the 100 factors that got Trump elected, Russian social media would not be one of them. He doesn't see it played any role at all. I'm not a pollster. I can't do the statistics. But this is Nate Silver saying this just wasn't a factor.
How about the report issued a couple days ago that showed all of the connections that they were doing? Interference in many ways. Nate Silver could be wrong.
He could be wrong. I could be wrong. You're absolutely right. But here's where I am worried. We're living today in a world where everybody is churning out conflicting narratives, conflicting facts, conflicting stories about what is essential. I am a scholar. You're a journalist. When I leave you today, I have to go see a doctor. What I expect of all three of us is that as professionals, we base what we do, say, and recommend on facts. And the facts are getting harder and harder to ascertain, but they're not all on our side. Russia does produce facts sometime, Larry. So how do we find out what the facts are today when we have this information war, if you want to call it that, on both sides and inside our own country? You said to me, for example, Putin likes Trump. Yes, the Russians favored Trump. Wouldn't you, given a choice between Hillary and Trump, where one says she's going to bomb you and the other says he wants to cooperate with you? They're rational people. But today, and I was in Moscow, let me think, November 25th, happened to be my birthday, and it happened to be the day of the naval conflict between Russia and Ukraine. I was there for a week. I have contacts. I just put myself in prison. Contacts with Russians are criminal now. That's another bad thing that's going on. But I heard repeatedly, not from Putin himself, but from people close to them, that they have all but given up on Trump. All but given up. For one reason, Trump cannot deliver. Stop and think what happened. Trump went to Helsinki in July for a summit, something every president since Eisenhower has done. Trump comes home. He's accused of treason. What does Trump do? He takes all sorts of Russian actions to prove he's not Putin's puppet. What happened next? He canceled two meetings with Putin. That's embarrassing to Putin. Who treats another world leader like that? It's not diplomatic. So the Russians are fed up, but they can't be fed up because of the nuclear weapons. And that's where we are today.
We will be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out the kosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
How would you like to earn an extra $10,000 or more a month from the comfort of your home? We show you how to win with a home-based business opportunity. This could be one of the best financial decisions you ever make. Work from home, full-time or part-time. Plus, you'll never have to talk to anyone. Our professional sales team closes all your sales for you, and you keep 70% of all the sales made. You could be earning money while you're sleeping, shopping, working out, wherever you are, day or night. Our system goes to work for you. You can make a great income without any special computer skills or sales training. Plus, you get paid fast, within just 24 to 48 hours after our professional sales team closes a sale for you. Let us help you eliminate your financial concerns. You could be earning enough money to pay off debt, buy a house, a car, or whatever the case may be. We've got you covered. If you'd like to add an extra $10,000 or more a month to your portfolio, and you would like to know exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it, go now to www.getstartedwithus.com. That's www.getstartedwithus.com. Again, that's www.getstartedwithus.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations, A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands, and a week into using Extendivite, my numb hands seem to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Welcome back. We are listening to Stephen F. Cohen explain to Larry King why the Russians, who may have once upon a time favored Donald Trump, have more or less given up on him because he can't deliver on improving relations with Russia.
All right, my scholar friend, do you wish Hillary were president?
You mean instead of Donald Trump? That's what you're asking me, right? Because if I had my wish, neither of them would be president. We'd think of somebody else.
You only had two choices.
You only had two choices. I can't answer the question. I was very worried about her, but more about the people around her. My attitude toward Trump today is, for all the ways he offends me, that on the one issue that I think is vital to us, our kids and our grandkids, and I got four of the grandkids now, is that we can't have any kind of war with Russia. Now, this little book, War with Russia, has a question mark at the end of the title. And it's written for general readers. It's not written for my scholarly colleagues. And to be fair, 90% of them do not agree with me. You get another professor of Russian studies up here, and he'll tell you Cohen's all wrong. He doesn't understand anything. Maybe.
Well, I've been reading and listening to Professor Cohen for 35 years, and he's not wrong. He's been right all along.
But this is my view based on 40 or 50 years of study, and I have never been as worried as I am today about war with Russia. Trump is the president we have for now. We don't have another president. And this talk of impeaching him is a very bad idea. If we want to get rid of him, vote him out in 220. But so long as he's president, he is responsible for our national security, which today is threatened most by accidental or intentional war with Russia. So that's why I wrote the book. That's the question I present to you today.
What if Mueller investigation proves disastrous for Trump? Meaning,
give me an example. What would be disastrous?
That he colluded with Russia on the election.
Well,
that would
first
be disastrous.
Of all,
if we found out clearly, if Mueller finds out clearly that Trump and his adversaries colluded with Russia over the election, that's borderline treason.
You know, I listened to this while I was earlier today with Mr. T walking around, and then I downloaded it, and I didn't recognize all of it. Some of it sounded familiar. I didn't recognize all of it. Now I'm realizing I downloaded a file from the wrong YouTube video from about maybe a year ago or so, because here he is talking about Mueller. But you know something? It's still good, but I will switch to the interview that I was intending to play.
How is Donald Trump's impeachment drama playing overseas? How's all this politicking thing, what's going on in the United States? How's it playing in Russia?
Well, they may be right, they may be wrong. It's something to discuss. But what we are calling Russiagate, and I guess now Ukrainegate, that is these charges against Trump that he has some nefarious ties to the Kremlin, in Russia itself, and I'm speaking now of the people, excuse me, Larry, the people in Russia who study the United States, they're my counterparts. Russia, they study the United States. They interpret these charges against Trump as being launched because Trump ran and was elected on a program of, quote, cooperating with Russia. In fact, I recall vividly you and I doing an interview together, and we were both struck by Trump's promise that he would cooperate with Russia. At that time, I guess it was 2016, the Cold War was heating up, and that was unusual. And I took the position with you, though I was not a Trump person, that that was a good thing. But in Russia today, and I follow this daily on the television and in the newspapers, there is this belief among the people who care about American-Russian relations that all this grief and all these charges against Trump originated because he wanted to cooperate with Russia. In other words, it originated with the enemies of what our generation, Larry, used to call détente. There is substantial truth in that. I don't think it's the whole truth. But that's the way it's viewed in Russia. There's one other thing I'll mention to you, and then I'll stop. Among young people, I mean people, let's say, 18 to 35, from my point of view, that's young, there's a disillusionment because these people, many of them were very pro-American. They wanted Russia to become more like America. But now they read every day about allegations that our intelligence agencies have been off the reservation, have been manipulating American politics, have been doing bad things. Well, they grew up in a system where that's what the Russian intelligence agencies do. So they had thought, unlike in Russia, intelligence agencies don't do that in America. Now they're being told, not by Russia, but by American news reports, which are broadcast in Russia, that that's happening here. So the reaction in Russia is, I would say, very profound.
Hi, how does Stephen Cohen feel about the debate that was held in Congress when John Rutherford, a Republican, told his colleagues that somewhere in Russia right now, President Putin is laughing at us? Do you agree with that?
No, it's an absolute profound misunderstanding of who Putin is and what he wants. And I can speak with some authority on this because for quite a long time, I've made Putin and his leadership a special topic of my study. Putin came to power in 2000 in a country that had been ruined by the worst peacetime depression in history.
And it warrants mentioning that this was a peacetime depression caused by policies pushed by the Jewish advisors, American and Russian Jewish advisors, to President Yeltsin for the benefit of Jewish oligarchs. And I mentioned on yesterday's show when I was talking to William, I recounted the history of President Yeltsin turning the tanks. He had just been impeached by the Russian parliament. He turned the tanks on the parliament building and arrested the acting president, the vice president, Alexander Rutskoy, and Ruslan Khasbulatov, the speaker of the parliament, arrested them. It was all cheered on by Clinton. Clinton thought that was just great. And it deserves mention that the reason Yeltsin was impeached was because of these horrible economic plans, the privatization scheme that allowed these Jewish oligarchs to take control of the country. That's what it was all about. Okay, let's let Professor Cohen continue.
Russia was in an economic ruination, and Putin's mission, and he spoke about this often, was to preside over Russia's recovery at home. Men were dying at 57 years old at that time, Larry. You and I would be pushing the daisies by now. To restore to Russia at home a lifestyle, a stability that had been lost in the 1990s, and thereby reposition Russia, it's true, as a great power, which it's always been on the world stage. That has been Putin's mission. To achieve that mission, he has said repeatedly that he wants, and I use his words, modernizing partnerships with the West. He wants a stable West that is trading with Russia. First and foremost, he has in mind Europe, because Putin is a European man, and Europe, particularly Germany, has enormous trade with Russia. But he also had in mind the United States. Therefore, instability in American-Russian relations, the accusations that Putin is attacking America, which is utter nonsense, this is antithetical. It's the opposite of how Putin sees his own mission. And it's been a serious setback for him as he tries to formulate policy at home and abroad. So he doesn't like any of this.
All right. Is Stephen Cohen an anti-Trumper?
Boy, that's a hard question. I can remember. It must have been in 2016 that you and I did this interview where Trump had said he wanted to cooperate with Russia. And I said, gosh, that's interesting. Nobody else is saying that. That's a good thing. But it's going to bring Trump a lot of grief. And, of course, he has. I didn't vote for President Trump. And I would have to see who the Democratic candidate is to know who I'll vote for in 2020. But I 100% support Trump's ongoing, continuing three-year policy of cooperating with Russia, which for some reason, because there's nothing to these Russiagate charges, I mean, nothing's been, it was all fiction from the beginning. I support Trump's persistence, and you got to admit that he's taken a lot of blows. It's been called treasonous, but he persists. I mean, he had Lavrov, the Soviet foreign minister, in the White House, in the Oval Office, it was a week ago, I think. And the press was horrible, called it treason. But Trump is just determined to have this cooperative relationship with Russia. In that regard, I support President Trump. In other regards, probably not. The question is, here's the problem for people such as you and me. We grew up knowing we shouldn't be one-issue political voters, right? Don't just take one issue. But I am fixated on the dangers in American-Russian relations. I think they're very dangerous. So to the extent that Trump appears to be determined to reduce those dangers, I support him in that regard.
How do you explain the Trump-Putin relationship?
Well, you know, this is very funny because last night I read in a newspaper that Trump had said all these remarkably affectionate, I think they use those words, affectionate words about Putin. And I have a file at home which is called Trump on Putin, Putin on Trump. You know, things they've said about each other. The only thing that I can find that Trump ever said in a really positive way about Putin was, and I remember when he said it, he said, Putin is a strong leader. Well, that's true. What is he supposed to say? Putin's a weak leader? That would be untrue. I don't find that pandering or subversive or treasonous. I mean, what do we want? I mean, it's almost as though we're no longer grown up. Do we want the President of the United States to curse at the occupant of the Kremlin, the other superpower? I mean, ever since the advent of atomic weapons and President Eisenhower, every American president has attempted to do diplomacy with whoever sits in the Kremlin to keep us safe from war, conceivably nuclear war. And we applauded that. And by the way, Larry, here's an interesting thing. The biggest episodes of what we call détente, that is cooperating with the Kremlin, were presided over by Republican presidents, right? Eisenhower, correct? Nixon. And finally, Ronald Reagan, who had the biggest cooperation detente of all. So you could argue, though I'm not sure Trump's aware of this, but he ought to say something about it, he is squarely in the Republican tradition of cooperating with Russia.
What has Putin said publicly about Trump?
Not very much. I mean, he gets a kind of smirk and wicked grin on his face when reporters ask him questions about whether he and Trump have some secret relationship based on collusion. I mean, I think Putin thinks it's preposterous because he knows there's no secret diplomacy. Or I shouldn't say secret diplomacy, because there has to be secret diplomacy. Let me give you an example that happened just this week. So there's this demand that Trump print, publish, make known the notes of his conversation with Putin the last time they met. Correct? I think it was in Helsinki. You know this scandal. They're now demanding in, on television and in Congress that they publish these notes. But this is impossible. Private diplomacy between the leaders of the United States and Russia have kept us safe since the advent of nuclear weapons. They have to be able to have private conversations. Why? Because always, always, there are the enemies of detente in Moscow and Washington who will attack the leader for doing cooperation. So I find it preposterous. I find it not in America's national interest. I find it childish, this notion that everything Putin and Trump say to each other should be published. We don't demand that when the presidents talk to the president of France, Macron, and Macron is, after all, pushing now for a soft policy toward Russia.
Were you appalled at Russia's invasion of the Ukraine?
You know, the problem with this being, I wasn't appalled, no. I think that they had choices that they decided not to take. But we have to remember back, what is it, five, almost 6 years now, 2014, the elected, he may have been a bad guy, Yanukovych, but he was constitutionally, legally elected president of Ukraine. And he was overthrown by a mob. I don't care what democratic slogans were on their banners. It was a mob. He fled. They were storming his residence. He fled to Russia. It appeared at that point that Ukraine would renege on Russia's lease of its most important naval base, Sevastopol. That was a dire threat to Russian national security. So Russia's reaction to that did not surprise me. Now, I know from people who know, because they have friends who work in the Kremlin, that Putin had options, and he debated them. But he thought it was an existential decision. He had to protect the Russian naval base at Sevastopol. And I mean, it's not a question of whether I approve of it. Question is, do I understand it? And I do understand it. And I think any Russian leader, even the ones we like and think are Democrats, would have had no choice but to do what Putin did.
You sound to me, Stephen, as a strong... strong may be a strong word. Supporter of Putin. I've been with Putin twice. You've never met him.
Correct.
What attracts you to him?
It's not my job. I mean, I've been at this, Larry, almost 50 years. As a scholar who studies Russia, it's never been my job to support one Russian leader over another. It's been my job to study him, comment on him, try to understand him. I will admit there's one exception. I came to know Mikhail Gorbachev, and I became very fond of him. And he was very kind to me. And our families became friends, so much so that my then 13-year-old daughter thought that Gorbachev was her godfather. He wasn't. But she got it in her head that this was her godfather, because we saw so much of Gorbachev, and he was so affectionate. But apart from the relationship with Gorbachev, I don't support one Russian leader or another. I have many friends in the Russian political class. And if I was a Russian, I might vote for one of them, not Putin. But it's what I do to try to understand Russian politics. And I have to say that once venerable profession of studying Russian politics has been lost in this country. In fact, I would submit to you, Larry, think about this. In all this nonsense about Russiagate, Russia itself has been lost. I mean, we get very few news stories about what's going on in Russia itself,
yeah.
An enormously important country. It's all about the Russiagate and the secret ties to Trump or somebody else. But what's going on in Russia?
Do you believe that Putin wants Trump reelected?
You know, I don't know. It's in a perfect world, Trump's cooperate with Russia, as I said before, is the American policy that Putin wants. On the other hand, Putin and his advisors on America are absolutely astonished and demoralized by all these scandals that have dragged Russia into American politics. I guess Putin would have to see what the alternative is, to see if he preferred somebody else.
Do you think?
But I don't think he feels personally wedded to Trump.
How would you characterize the current state of U.S.-Ukraine relations?
The problem here is which Ukraine? I mean, you've got powerful political forces in Ukraine trying to deal both with Russia and the United States, and it's become an unholy mess. What strikes me, and it's not yet tragic, it may become tragic, but it's sad, that this relatively new and relatively young president of Ukraine, Zelensky, right, who everybody points out had once been a TV comedian, becomes elected president of Ukraine. Now, he ran, Larry, on a program with ending the war with Russia. He ran on a peace program. He was kind of a George McGovern candidate, except that he won. It is his mission. It's his political mandate. It's what his, and he won with about 71% of the vote. It's what his supporters wanted, was an end of the war with Russia, an end of the fighting in Donbass and elsewhere. But he has been thwarted primarily because he's been dragged into American politics. This is the bad thing. So my view is that all of us, including Trump, including those people who are against Trump, really should withdraw from Ukraine and let Zelensky make his peace with Russia.
We'll be right back after the break.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
So, you love talk radio. Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
He has cards to play. He can negotiate. Putin is ready and waiting. We now have this big fight over shipping military, more military, about $400 billion, I think, $380 billion worth of military equipment to Ukraine. Why? Why? Barack Obama was pressured to do that, and he refused. One of the wise decisions Obama made as president. First of all, you don't know whose hands those weapons are going to end up with. Ukraine's one big black market. Secondly, why risk an escalation of the fighting? What we should want Zelensky to do is to continue this peace process, sometimes known as the Minsk Accord, with Russia, to settle this dispute. What's the point of sending more weapons to Ukraine, which, by the way, in its warehouses, has plenty of weapons?
Do you support the impeachment of Trump?
No. I don't support the impeachment of Trump for a whole lot of reasons, but I think that, and particularly with elections, what, 9-10 months away, this is not something, I don't see any crime for which, you know, it's compelling to make an impeachment case. I've looked into all this stuff in Russian here. I mean, it may have been bad for him. He had a couple phone calls with Zelensky, which could have been better. I don't think he's got great advisors in the White House. Some of the people he brought in the White House, he didn't like, but he brought them in to get the Russiagate accusations. He brought in hardliners like Fiona Hill and John Bolton to make it look like he was tough. I don't think he gets good advice, but no, I don't.
I think it deserves underscoring that the reason he brought in John Bolton and Fiona Hill was because he was under attack from the whole Russiagate hoax perpetrated by Democrats who want to make people think that they're the peaceful ones.
You think Putin is the most powerful man in the world?
Gosh, I mean, that would take us to what we mean by powerful. Let's change the word to influential.
Okay.
In world politics. I would certainly say that he's one of, and here's what's interesting, partly because of Trump's behavior, but partly because Putin has been an advocate of negotiating conflicts all the way from Syria to Ukraine and beyond. Putin has emerged for European leaders, I'm not talking about American, as one of the preeminent European statesmen. Now, when Putin came to power, that's what he wanted, as I mentioned before. So Putin's reputation, his role in Europe, is very different from what it is here. I mean, for example, I mentioned that Trump had the Russian foreign minister Sergei Lavrov in the White House, a perfectly normal thing, and there was a big scandal. How dare he have the Russian foreign minister in the White House? Well, what should we do with the Russian foreign minister? Snub him, shoot him, deport him. I mean, foreign ministers are supposed to negotiate diplomacy and peace. So Putin is now seen as a mainstay of European security. That is something new. And we haven't seen that, maybe not in the 20th century, that role being played by Russia. A lot of it has to do with Russia's back on its feet. But a lot of it has to do with Putin and Lavrov, who is probably the number one foreign minister in the world. I mean, they're pretty good at what they do. Diplomacy-wise.
Personally, Stephen, in all the years I've known you, what draws you to Putin? You are fascinated with him. What draws you to him?
Well, I don't like the word draw, but I am fascinated by him. And again, it comes back to what happened in Russia in the 1990s, the collapse of the country. And when I say the country, I mean the lives, the professions of my personal friends. So many people I know lost their professions. So many people had to sell their household belongings because they weren't being paid. The reason, and I'm going to turn your question around a little bit here, Putin remains remarkably popular in Russia. Even though inflation, even though pensions have been reformed in a way not to the benefit of people, even though Putin's ratings have dropped, he remains remarkably popular. Why is he so popular? One is people don't see an alternative. So you understand, if they don't have a plausible alternative in front of him, then they say, yeah, I'm for Putin. But I think it's just lasting gratitude that Putin presided over Russia's rise from the disaster of the 1990s. Because almost every family in Russia, including young kids and their grandparents, lived through a catastrophe in the 1990s. And it wasn't Putin personally and alone, but he built a team of economists and of people who knew what they were doing, and he got Russia stabilized and back on its feet at home. For that, every Russian I know, including ones who don't like Putin, remain grateful to him.
And I'll be back again next week with more exciting episodes of National Bugle Radio.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.